Hi, I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness this week, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Pamela Smith, and we're going to talk about bioidentical hormones, amino acids, and supplements, and her two new books, Vitamins, Minerals, Herbs, and More, and Demystifying Weight Loss. How are you, Dr. Smith?
How are you tonight?
I'm good, thanks. What two fabulous books, and I know you have another one coming out soon, don't you?
I do. It will be out actually on Friday.
Oh, what is it? What is it going to be about?
What You Must Know About Women's Hormones.
Oh, wow. I mean, the one that you've written already is fabulous. I can't imagine
it. Thank you.
It's really wonderful. So before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and tell everybody where to find you and your books?
Well, my books you can find at any major bookstore, Borders, Barnes & Noble, etc. I've been a physician for over 30 years. And I specialize in natural hormonal therapy, and I'm what is called a metabolic anti-aging specialist, which is the newest and fastest growing field in medicine.
You must have a story as to how you got there. You have a brief. Can you tell me briefly before we start with questioning?
Oh, certainly. Actually, I was an emergency room physician at the Detroit Medical Center, and very happy being an ER physician, when all of a sudden I had developed insomnia, and it was amazing. I went to 11 physicians. Everyone said the same thing, take a sleeping pill, and I was very lucky. I went to the very first anti-aging conference, and there I was, second seminar, second slide, women without progesterone frequently have insomnia. I did one of the very first saliva tests in the Midwest. I had no progesterone at all. And fortunately, my pharmacist at the end of my block was a compounding pharmacist, and he helped me develop the amount of progesterone I needed. And I started taking progesterone and slept within 48 hours like a baby. And
really?
Have ever slept. Yes.
So I had somebody the other day talking about progesterone and that person and testing. And that person said, oh, I don't believe that those saliva tests work. What do you have to say about that?
Well, actually, studies have shown the following. When we look at serum testing, it only tells us what goes on in the serum, meaning the blood. And so when we measure hormones by blood, what you're going to end up finding out is that you only see a small picture of what happens in the whole body. When you do saliva testing or you measure hormones in the urine, and a 24-hour urine, then you'll find out what's going on in the rest of the tissues, and then the person does not get overdosed.
Interesting. Okay. So, where do they find you?
They can always find me. I'm the Center for Healthy Living and Longevity, and it's CFHLL.com. Or you can always call our office at 313-884-3288.
Do you do any consulting over the phone?
I do consulting over the phone.
Okay.
We always rather see someone in person, but we do consults over the phone.
Okay, great. Okay, first I want to talk about a little bit about how do you know to even think that you might have a hormone imbalance? Let's start basic, and then I'll get asking specific questions when we just give them an idea where to start.
Well, for women, they can have hormonal imbalances at any age. And for younger women, that can be PMS, that can be postpartum depression, that can be something called polycystic ovarian syndrome. Some common symptoms are anxiety, irritability, insomnia, mood swings, depression. Then, as women get just a little bit older, they can be perimenopausal or menopausal. What most people don't realize is that women can have symptoms 5, 10, or even 15 years before they go through menopause, and they can still have perimenopausal symptoms. So women can be as young as 30 and be perimenopausal.
Do you think that our soaps and lotions and supplements have anything to do with the estrogen dominance that's going on in a lot of the people?
Well, we certainly know that plastics are a problem. Plastics are a phytoestrogen, and they mimic estrogens in the body, and particularly when they're frozen, when they're microwaved, et cetera, then those phytoestrogens can go into people. Plus, what also happens is when people take any kind of hormone, for example, when women take birth control pills or women take natural or synthetic hormone replacement, when they urinate out those hormones, it frequently goes into the city water, and it's really not filtered out. It goes right back into the water again. And women are what we call estrogen dominant, very common to see this. And also, well, think about it this way. When people are 18 or 20, now they do not look like 18-year-olds did 30 years ago. Women now are bigger. Males frequently now lose hair at 20, 25 years of age, mm-hmm. when before they didn't lose hair until they were 50, 60 years of age.
It seems very logical to me. So how do you think is the best form to take hormones?
Well, we do know that the best form of hormonal therapy is to mimic the body and the way it always produces everything. In other words, the same exact chemical structure that God gave you to begin with. And this would be natural hormonal therapy. But the word natural doesn't really mean it comes from a plant. In this case, hormones usually come from soy or yams, and much more common, yams. But really, the word bioidentical or the word natural means the same chemical structure that you've always had. And there was a landmark article in Postgraduate Medicine in January of this year that reviewed the entire world's research on the subject and showed that bioidentical hormones are the way to go. This is a safe way to give hormone replacement. And women need to maintain their hormonal function, but so do men. Men lose their hormones as well.
So does it matter how the yam is processed? Because someone was talking to me about wild yam and said something, I don't remember exactly, but something about the way it is processed makes a difference. Do you know about that? Does it matter which one you get?
Well, it does. If you just have plain yams, yams by themselves for humans do not make progesterone. An enzyme has to be added, and then it can make progesterone or other hormones.
Okay. And what about men? What the pine pollen, does that, do you know anything about that for men and testosterone?
There's many different kinds of herbs and other nutrients that can mimic hormones in both men and women. Men usually don't lose hormonal function until a little bit later, usually after the age of 50 to 55. But then, of course, all of this is predicated on how stressed you are. There's a hormone called DHEA, and that hormone is made in the adrenal glands. That hormone makes both estrogen and testosterone in men and women. And if you're really stressed, you can have hormonal dysfunction at any age.
So can you supplement DHEA, or how do you do to build that up?
You can supplement DHEA. In fact, in the United States, you can get it without a prescription, but we never recommend that. It's very important to measure. If you take DHEA and you don't need it, it does increase your risk of cancer.
Interesting. How do you know, without testing, if you're a woman sitting at home, how do you know whether you think you should do a little more progesterone or whether it should be an estrogen? What are some clues to look for?
That's a great question. We never recommend that anybody, male or female, take hormones without measuring. Let me give you an example. A lot of women are afraid of the word estrogen. And estrogen in the body literally has 400 functions. And what happens is if women take progesterone and they either have too much progesterone or they take progesterone and their estrogen is low, then they have an increased risk in many diseases, but a big one is an increased incidence in insulin resistance and diabetes. The blood sugar goes up. The hormones in the body literally are a symphony, and they all have to play in tune for the person to be healthy.
Does it matter? Is it the ratio between the estrogen and the progesterone, or is it just it needs to be at a certain range?
Well, it's the ratio between estrogen and progesterone, but it's also the ratio of progesterone to thyroid, the ratio of all these hormones to cortisol, the stress hormone.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone's healthy, they have no symptoms, their labs are dead center of normal, and the ratio of all the hormones are normal as well.
Okay. So now let's move in a little bit to how to lose our fat. I have that problem. I mean, I was thin as a rail, and then all of a sudden last year I noticed my leg, and I was fortunate. I had really good legs all my life until last year, and they went to adipose, and I just noticed it one day in the mirror. And so I talked to Jay Mead, and I started doing progesterone, and my legs came back. But I still have all the belly fat, so I know everybody wants to know about that as well, not just me. Where do you start?
Well, when it comes to weight, weight can definitely be hormonally related. If you have too much progesterone, you gain weight, too much estrogen. If thyroid's not enough, you gain weight. If you have too much insulin, you do. If you're stressed, you gain weight. In fact, stress may be one of the biggest reasons people put weight around the middle. But weight loss is literally a multifactorial problem. I never thought I would write a book on weight loss, but it became painfully obvious to me as a physician that it was much more than calories in and calories out. If people have allergies, for example, they can gain weight if they eat foods they're allergic to. And this one is really quite common. There's two different kinds of reactions that you can get to an allergy to foods. The very common IgE response that we're used to if you get a rash, if you eat something you're allergic to, or short of breath. But even more common than that is the IgG response. And when you eat foods that you have an IgG allergy to, you get a high. Epinephrine and norepinephrine surge, and you literally feel wonderful. And so people will keep eating those foods over and over, and that sets up an inflammatory response, and people gain weight. I'm afraid to test myself for chocolate. I love chocolate. I'm probably allergic.
So that brings up another question. Epinephrine and norepinephrine are excitatory, right?
They are excitatory neurotransmitters, yes.
So for some reason, I can't grasp it in my mind how if you have low epinephrine and high epinephrine, norepinephrine, if they're excitatory, how does that cause you to gain weight? It looks like it would make it burn faster.
Well, it sets the body into an emergency state. And when your body is in a state of emergency, it literally thinks you're running from a dinosaur. And if you're running from a dinosaur, your body protects itself. It thinks you're not going to eat, and it will store food. So anything you put in your body, even if you ate only salad with no salad dressing, everything that goes in gets stored when your body's in a state of emergency. But it only has one way it stores food when you're in that state of emergency, and that is fat cells. So if you're very stressed and you only ate salads even, you could still gain weight or certainly not lose because everything that's being stored is fat.
So how do you turn that off with your thyroid or with tyrosine or GABA? How do you direct it?
Well, we measure all of these things. Fortunately, science here is to help us. So we can measure, for example, if people have allergies. We can now measure neurotransmitters. We can measure epinephrine, norepinephrine, serotonin, GABA, PEA, and all the other neurotransmitters.
Okay, let me think how I want to go here. What about low thyroid and amino acids? If you have low, a lot of people have the low thyroid and then they get belly fat and they start getting heart disease. How do they, and their thyroid tests that their conventional doctor tells them that their thyroid's fine?
Well, that's the thing. With thyroid, you have to do all the testing. The doctor needs to measure a TSH, which is thyroid stimulating hormone. They have to measure free T3 and free T4. T3 and T4 are the two major thyroid hormones. Reverse T3, which is how your body stores thyroid, and then thyroid antibodies to make sure that your body's not producing antibodies against its own thyroid production. And if you do all of those, you get about 95% of people. Commonly, only one or two of those tests are done. Now, there's a subset of people that even if you measure all of those things, they still have symptoms of low thyroid function. And for those people, you need to do a basal body temperature. You need to test the temperature underneath the arm before someone gets out of bed, and that's for 3 days, and you need to measure it for 10 minutes under the arm. And if you have low basal body temperature, then that's very indicative of thyroid dysfunction.
So how do you treat, what does that mean if you have the thyroid dysfunction? What do you do for it?
Well,
I know that's a broad-based question, but I just know so many people that have these problems, you know?
Well, for one thing, you want optimal function of the thyroid. The thyroid-stimulating hormone needs to be 2.5 or below for optimal function, even though labs may say that up to 5.5 is normal. If the TSH is 2.5 or below, then you have good function. Above that, you don't. Plus, when we look at thyroid, it's not just about giving medication. There are many things that affect thyroid production, for example, iodine. If you don't have enough iodine, then your thyroid doesn't work very well. And some people just need iodine supplementation.
Mm-hmm.
Selenium, B vitamin, vitamin A, even too much calcium and too much copper can affect how the body's thyroid works.
Calcium and what? Well, what's the second thing?
Too much copper or too much calcium.
So I think people, another thing people should think about, and I'd like your opinion on this, everybody cuts back on salt, and that's our source of iodine. So I think thyroid hormones are dropping, and people aren't even aware because their doctor says get off salt. Do you think so?
That's a very common issue, particularly in Michigan, which is where I'm from. We're the goiter belt for that reason. We don't have a lot of iodine, so all of our salt is iodinized. And when people don't use salt, they don't get enough iodine.
So
also
how do you take it? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Also what can happen is for some people, when they're very, very stressed, then their adrenals do not function as well as they could. And when the adrenal function is only a small amount and not normal, people need extra salt to make them be healthy.
Does it matter if it's sea salt or potassium salt? Does it matter what kind?
Sea salt usually does not contain iodine.
Okay. So I'd like to ask you a few questions about amino acids, too, because I think it's a topic that we don't hear very much about, and your book, it does a great job covering it. Tell me why we need taurine and tyrosine and lysine and N-acetylcysteine, because so many people don't know what those are. We know about vitamins, but we don't know about amino acids.
Well, that's true. And you can measure amino acids two ways. You can measure amino acids by doing a 24-hour urine, or you can measure it by blood. And certainly taurine is one that is huge to talk about nowadays, because when you're stressed, the body gets depleted of taurine. And it's very important for the metabolization of insulin in the body. It also helps modulate calcium. It's an inhibitory neurotransmitter itself. It lowers bad cholesterol. It stabilizes the heart rhythm. It has so many different functions in the body. And people that are deficient in taurine can have anxiety. They can be hyperactive. There's a lot of different reasons why people have anxiety. So when they do, we commonly measure amino acids. Also, people with depression, people with OCD, ADD, ADHD commonly have amino acids that are not balanced. And taurine is not in a lot of foods. There's a little bit of taurine in brewer's yeast and meat and some seafood and eggs. But if you're depleted because you're stressed, then taurine sometimes has to be supplemented.
So if you take a B complex, do you need to take an additional B6 to go with that, to go with the taurine, or is the B-complex going to take care of it?
B-complex is usually good enough, but if you have a major deficiency of amino acids, many people need a little bit more B6 because it helps a lot of these amino acids work. Another big amino acid is methionine. Methionine is very important in the body. To help with folate B6 and B12, And if the body doesn't have enough B6, B12, and folate, then homocysteine, another amino acid, goes up. And if homocysteine is high, the person has an increased risk in breast cancer, prostate cancer for a male. They have an increased risk in heart disease, depression, bone loss. It's huge, the number of things that occur if amino acids are not balanced as they should be.
So is the taurine, I know it's made from, how do you say it, methionine? How do you say that?
Methionine.
So do you, if you supplement taurine, do you need to supplement methionine, or if you, or can, do you take them both together, or do you just, which one if, would you focus on supplementing?
Well, usually we, again, look at the balance. If you take a good multivitamin and you eat a decent diet that includes some sort of major protein, then many times you have enough amino acids. Amino acids build protein in the body. If you have a very high carb diet, then it's going to be hard to have enough amino acids.
Okay. So what about 5-HT and tryptophan? Why would we need those?
Well, tryptophan is another essential amino acid, meaning that the body has to take it in. And it does require B6 to have a good function of tryptophan. Most of us have heard about tryptophan because it helps us with sleep. But it also boosts growth hormone, the hormone that keeps us younger. Tryptophan is needed for the production of niacin in the body. Tryptophan is also very important to help break down serotonin, the calming neurotransmitter in the body, so that it works.
Do you need magnesium with that?
Magnesium is a wonderful mineral. It has 300 functions in the body. Magnesium has a nice calming effect, and so magnesium works very well with tryptophan.
Do you have a preference over to the form of magnesium?
Magnesium glycinate, glycinate, is one that gets into the body very well, and we use it a lot for insomnia, heart rhythm, calming, mind chatter.
What about transdermal magnesium?
Transdermal magnesium is something that works very well, and usually we do have that compounded by a compounding pharmacy, although there's a few companies that make it. Magnesium is something that when you put it on the skin, it's a very large molecule, and so you can't mix it with anything else. It would just be magnesium only on the skin, which is what we call transdermal.
And I think someone told me that if you use transdermal magnesium, that it helps the body create higher levels of DHEA. Do you know?
Well, it doesn't directly help the body produce more DHEA, but when you have a calming effect of magnesium, it allows DHEA not to be depleted.
Okay, so it doesn't increase it, but it rather just keeps it from leaving, right?
Correct.
Okay. What about D3? Do you have any comments about D3?
Ah, vitamin D3.
Yeah.
Probably one of the hottest topics right now.
Yeah.
When it comes to vitamins. But it's amazing. You know, vitamin D is actually a hormone. And if you don't have enough vitamin D, not only can you lose bone, but you have an increased risk in breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer, Parkinson's, MS, diabetes, high blood pressure, depression, and even back pain.
Interesting. You know, one thing I'd like for you to talk about, since you have such a knowledge across the board about vitamins, minerals, and supplements, is so many people that I know from all over the world that email me or call me or whatever, they go, well, I take a good multivitamin, you know, but it's going to have 250 milligrams of magnesium oxide, maybe, you know, 250 milligrams of C and 50 milligrams of B or 20 milligrams of B. Do low dosages like that do anything?
Low dosages for some things do a little bit. One of the common ones I see is lutein. And that one really has to be a much bigger dose than most people take, unless they're taking a special supplement for the eye. Lutein is a kind of vitamin A. It's wonderful for vision. It helps prevent macular degeneration. But commonly in a multivitamin, we just see 25 micrograms. And the starting dose is 6,000 micrograms.
Wow.
And so for things like lutein, it does make a very big difference.
What about your minerals, like magnesium, for example, and C? You know, people who maybe have been diagnosed with cancer or had the flu, and they say, well, I take, you know, 100 milligrams of vitamin C every day. Is that going to do them any good?
It does. We know that vitamin C is very good for the immune system. We know it helps maintain memory. In fact, Linus Pauling took a huge amount of vitamin C, and he took 20,000 milligrams, which is more than most people can tolerate. But then, of course, he lived to 93 with his memory intact and won his second Nobel Prize after the age of 70.
So when you take D3, that also matters in dosages too, right? You do it well late.
D3 is, and I should mention this, a couple of new trials have come out that is great for the immune system, and they are now suggesting D3 to help prevent H1N1. But vitamin D is fat-soluble, so you can get toxic. Fat-soluble vitamins, by and large, are stored in the body, and so very important to have vitamin D measured by everybody's primary care doctor or other physician, and that should be measured by 25-hydroxyvitamin D.
When you take doses of vitamin D like that, do you still, and also the transdermal magnesium, because I heard when you do these two things, you may or may not need to supplement calcium. Do you know?
Well, it's all about balance in the body, and a lot of people can get their calcium from different foods. In my book, What You Must Know About Vitamins, Minerals, Herbs, and More, it has a section on each of the minerals and everything else we've been talking about, but it also lists the foods from top to bottom, meaning the amount of food, for example, that's very high in magnesium to the smallest amount in magnesium. And so we always try and eat our way into things first, and then we supplement. But for magnesium, most people in today's world would be better off to also supplement, particularly for bone structure.
What about fish oils? I know that's so important. Well, I won't say fish oils. I'm going to say omega oils. How do we take those? Do we take fish oil? Do we take virage oil? Do we take flax oil? And how do we balance them out? How much 3 and 6 or 9 do we need?
Well, if there was only one nutrient I was going to suggest for people to take, and if they were only going to take one thing, hands down, it would be omega-3 fatty acids. They're anti-inflammatory. And many of the chronic diseases are inflammatory in nature. To prevent many chronic diseases, we want to decrease inflammation all the way from gum disease to arthritis to heart disease to even PMS. Menstrual cramps are a major problem with inflammation, and the omega-3s are anti-inflammatory. The omega-6s can cause inflammation, but a little bit of inflammation heals. And some of the omega-6s like borage oil and even primrose oil are very helpful, particularly for things like PMS. We also need omega-9 fatty acids. Those are neutral fatty acids. They don't cause inflammation or decrease inflammation. And a common omega-9 would be olive oil.
Does it matter the form of the olive oil, whether it's the light or the virgin or the extra virgin or just the normal? I mean, does it matter which one?
It does. The olive oil should be extra virgin olive oil. That is the best.
What is the difference with that?
Well, if you have non-extra virgin, it can go rancid very easily, and that's the thing we really worry about with omega-3s.
Okay. Now, when I was reading the book today, I've got about probably 3 or 4 or 5 books in from people lately on these topics, and I went, oh, okay, I need to do oils. But how do you know what's the best source? Is it flax oil? Is it fish oil? Is it soy? which one do we get? Because I got conflicting information about which one. I couldn't make up my mind, so I just bought all of them. But how do you know which one to take?
Well, if you want the perfect answer, of course, you can measure the fatty acids. Most people don't have them measured, but it is available to measure them. Most Americans are deficient in omega-3s, so fish oil would be a perfect choice. There's other foods that contain omega-3s. Most nuts do. Avocados and lamb is very high in omega-3s.
What was that last thing?
Lamb. The meat lamb is very high in omega-3 fatty acids.
I still don't understand you.
Lamb?
Oh, lamb, the meat. Oh.
The meat.
Sorry.
Yeah, lamb is very high. With flax, that is part omega-3 and part omega-6. And flax is wonderful for people, except for some people, if they're not healthy, they cannot convert flax into omega-3s. And if people are not healthy, it's best to take the omega-3s. For someone who's healthy, flax or omega-3s are both fine.
Okay. What about people who are concerned about getting heavy metals in the fish oils?
Great question. Heavy metals can occur in fish oils, particularly mercury. And if you buy omega-3 fatty acids that are what we are called pharmaceutical grade, then they're guaranteed to be pure with outside verification by another company. They're also guaranteed to get into the body and do what they're supposed to do. Now, that's called bioavailable.
Does that mean that somebody can go to CVS and buy their fish oil since it's a pharmacy?
Well, you have to ask. Many stores carry some things that are pharmaceutical grade and some things that are not. If you ask in the store and they don't know what pharmaceutical grade means, then you probably should not buy your nutrients in that store.
Okay. So barrage oil, what is that and how is it different? Because I've been trying to straighten all this out in my head lately.
Well, borage oil is an omega-6 fatty acid, but it's one that has a very nice effect that for many people can work for dry eyes. It can improve vision. Some people may have some psychological issues that can be treated with omega-6 fatty acids, like borage oil. And omega-6s have some good functions in the body. They're needed to make hormones. They're very important nutrients for cell-to-cell communication and energy. So you do want to have some omega-6s. You don't want to have none. And borage oil is one of the best forms of omega-6.
And is there any other way to get 3 other than fish oil? If you're sick at all or not totally healthy, then you have to kind of be away from flax. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it doesn't work as well if you're sick.
Okay.
Omega-3s you can also get through algae, seaweed, also contain omega-3s. And those come as a supplement, or obviously you can also eat the seaweed.
Okay. And what kind of dosage should you look at? Let's say if you're trying to treat heart disease, for example, or high blood pressure, what kind of dosage would you look at? Or arthritis?
For all of those things, most people need around 2,000 milligrams a day of omega-3 fatty acids.
Okay. Now we've got probably about, 20 minutes. I'm going to let you talk about what you want to talk about for a while, if you want to.
Well, on the subject of nutrients, there's a very important one I'd like to talk about called phosphatidylserine. And everybody does not have to remember that long name, phosphatidylserine. You can just call it PS, because that's how it's sold in the store. PS increases acetylcholine, the main neurotransmitter of memory. And so studies have shown that PS is great to treat ADD, ADHD in kids or adults. It's also wonderful if you're stressed. It's great to prevent memory loss, treat memory loss. It's also marvelous post-stroke. It has no side effects whatsoever. If someone weighs 100 pounds or more, the dose is 300 milligrams, and it mixes with all known medications. It's marvelous. And so it's one that is less well-known, I think, but very good. Another interesting nutrient that's less well known that's getting a lot of play in the literature is theanine. Theanine at 400 milligrams twice a day is marvelous for mind chatter. And you have to take it twice a day for that to happen. So even if you're going to sleep and that's when your mind chatter occurs and you just can't turn off your brain from working, taking it twice a day is very great to help with the mind chatter.
Are you also talking about constant running thoughts that people have in their heads? Also, you know, self-esteem issues, you know, constant conditioning thoughts. Does that help too?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay. Now, about the PS, there's a lawyer that I work with that she's been telling me, Eva, I don't know what I'm going to do if I don't get my son some help. He's, you know, I can't stand it anymore, the chatter and the unfocused attention. Does that work for children, too?
It does. In fact, there's been some major trials on people that have focusing issues, and phosphatidylserine has been wonderful in all of those. So has the amino acid carnitine. Carnitine has been great for memory as acetyl-L-carnitine, and carnitine is great for energy in the body, but there's been wonderful trials for ADD, ADHD, or just focusing issues, particularly in men or boys.
Interesting. So how do they take those together? And what dosage of L-carnitine do they take?
They can take those together, and the dosage of L-carnitine, if the kidney function is normal, is around 250 to 500 milligrams a day.
Are there any side effects?
Side effects to L-carnitine, not at that dosage. You would have to go much higher than that.
Like what? What at 1,000, what happens?
At 1,000, the biggest issue would really be with the fact if you didn't have normal kidney function.
Oh, okay. Okay. Let's see, what else do I want to know about? What about arginine? You know, I know that's a great thing for people who have blood pressure and heart disease issues, but it can cause some problems if you have, you know, cold sores. So what do you do about that?
Well, arginine is a two-edged sword. It's made in the body from some other amino acids, and it does great things. It builds the immune system. It builds muscle. It helps wounds heal. It's good for the gut. It makes growth hormone. It helps with circulation. It helps to produce something called nitric oxide. And that's really the key component. Nitric oxide has good and bad points. You get too little, that's not healthy. Too much, that's not healthy either. And arginine has to sit in the body with a ratio to lysine. And lysine is the one that helps with cold sores. But if you get too much arginine, you can get cold sores. But if you give lysine without arginine, that's not healthy either. You can end up with a fatty liver and other things.
Really? What kind of dosages would cause that?
Well, usually there's not a problem with giving the lysine if it's given short term. So if the patient's taking lysine for an actual cold sore for a few weeks, that's not a problem at all. But if they're taking lysine to prevent cold sores, at usually the dosage somewhere between 500 and 1,000 milligrams a day, then after 6 months, they do have to give a little bit of arginine with that, or that's when the problem arises.
That's good to know. I didn't know that. That's interesting. What about one of my favorite things that I love is NAC. What can you tell us about that?
NAC. That stands for N-acetylcysteine. N-acetylcysteine makes glutathione in the body, and glutathione is the strongest antioxidant that there is, and it helps prevent free radical production. And it's very difficult to take glutathione by mouth, because if you do, it gets broken down by the enzymes in your mouth. But if you take NAC, N-acetylcysteine, it's great as an immune builder, and it works very well. You don't want to take it long-term, though, unless you also take vitamin C with it. Otherwise, you can develop kidney stones. So if you're going to take N-acetylcysteine for more than 6 months, then you should also take 1 to 2,000 milligrams a day of vitamin C with it.
Okay. Does it have any negative things other than kidney stones that people need to know about?
Yes. N-acetylcysteine, NAC, because it builds the immune system, can be an issue for some people who have an autoimmune disease. A disease where their immune system is already in a hyper mode, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And so we usually don't give NAC to people with autoimmune diseases.
Okay. What about GABA? Does that absorb if you take it orally? And why would we need GABA?
For most people, they can absorb GABA in the new form. GABA is a calming neurotransmitter. And so it's what helps our body stay calm.
And is it well absorbed? Does it cross the blood-brain barrier? I mean, does it do you good to take it in a supplement form?
Well, it does fine for most people to take in a supplement form. And, again, it does a lot of things by lowering blood pressure, prevents anxiety. It's in some foods, like brewer's yeast, brown rice, seeds, soy, eggs. And so it helps with racing mind also. It can get out of balance, however, with some of the other neurotransmitters. So some people can experience a tingling sensation in their face, and they get a little short of breath with GABA if it gets out of balance with some of the other neurotransmitters.
Like, would you mean if you get too much that it does that?
If you get too much, it does that.
And so what's the thing that you partner with it so that that doesn't happen?
Well, it really means all the neurotransmitters have to be balanced.
Okay.
Kind of a thing to keep in mind is if the person weighs less than 125 pounds, 375 milligrams three times a day is a good starting dose for GABA. If they weigh more than 125 pounds, most people will have to go to 750 milligrams three times a day.
Okay. Now, for testing, I can tell you that when I went to a conventional doctor, he had no clue what I was talking about. And first of all, and then when I did tell him about it, he said, "Well, I don't believe it; those aren't accurate." Where do we go for tests? Do you
for
know the
tests,
some companies?
Well, there are some companies. The best thing to do would be to see somebody who literally is a metabolic anti-aging specialist, because they've done a 2-year fellowship and getting a master's degree in this field to really be a specialist in this area. Most of the neurotransmitter testing is done by neuroscience. It's also good to look at the same time at amino acids and fatty acids and organic acids. And companies like Metametrix, Genova, those kind of companies do those tests very well.
And I can't think of the one that I was. The one that tests the mineral levels. Do you know which one I'm talking about? I can't think of the name. It just blew my mind.
A toxic metal test is very important to do in many people. We do a lot of this in the Great Lakes because the Great Lakes sometimes are toxic.
Spectracell, that's what it was. Do you like them?
Spectracell. Spectracell is a great company to look at measuring 30 vitamins in the body. And we do that all the time. And toxic metal testing is something that's done as well. Genova, Doctors Data, and Metametrix all do that test.
Okay. Now we got about five to eight minutes, somewhere in there. Anything else that you specifically would like to focus on?
Well, I would like to look a little bit more at what happens with the hormonal symphony in the body. Looking at women, estrogen really does have 400 functions in the body, and it's taste, touch, smell, hearing, skin tone. Estrogen lowers cholesterol, blood sugar, blood pressure, maintains memory, maintains bone, has to balance with progesterone. Progesterone decreases the growth of breast cancer cells, builds bone, prevents anxiety, irritability, insomnia, mood swings, and depression. Progesterone also has to balance with testosterone. Women need testosterone. It's their sense of well-being, it's strength of bone. And then all of those are governed by thyroid. Also, DHEA and cortisol, the adrenal hormones, govern what happens with those. And in today's stress society, I really don't know anybody that's not stressed anymore. It is a 365, 24/7 society. Cortisol is not always normal. So we have to look at cortisol being normal. People can not only gain weight, but if cortisol is not normal, they can have fatigue, their cholesterol, blood sugar, blood pressure can climb, their thyroid cannot work well, and their immune system becomes compromised.
I have a question. When you want to boost your adrenals, how do you do that? I did that one time because I know I have adrenal fatigue, but I have all those symptoms. But when I took the thing that I bought at the health food store, it was a animal adrenal. It sent my blood pressure soaring high, and blood went out my nose and hit the wall on the other side of the room. How do you support your adrenals?
Well, there's different ways of supporting the adrenal glands. What happened with you is what you took had licorice in it. And licorice is excellent to support the adrenals, but some people can't take it because it drives up their blood pressure. But you can take adaptogenic herbs, things like ginseng, ashwagandha. They're adaptogens, so they help if cortisol is too high or too low. Or if you have adrenal fatigue, you can take adrenal extracts. Those are purified from an animal source, but you would want to take the extract by itself and not one that contained licorice if you're prone to high blood pressure or you have high blood pressure.
That's good to know. I had no idea about that. That's good to know. And one more thing. When you take the bioidentical hormones, is it better to take it by mouth or topically?
That's a great question. When we look at estrogen, and this is all in my book, What You Must Know About Women's Hormones, when you end up taking estrogen, it's always to be put on the skin. Estrogen by mouth is a problem. It increases E1 estrogen, which is the kind that increases women's risk of breast cancer. Estrogen by mouth is very hard on the liver and gallbladder. And estrogen by mouth can also lower growth hormone, the hormone that keeps us young. Progesterone can be taken by mouth or on the skin, but if you have a great deal of anxiety or you have insomnia, then progesterone should be by mouth because that way it crosses the blood-brain barrier and it gets into the brain. It attaches to the GABA receptors, and it has a very nice calming effect.
That's interesting to know.
So, yeah, on the skin, it is not as effective for that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
With testosterone, it's more commonly put on the skin. We do give it by mouth in younger women, but as time goes on, we put it more commonly on the skin because it can be hard on the liver as we age. The thing about putting it on the skin is you do have to rotate sites. If you put it on the same place, for example, on your thigh all the time, the woman will grow hair there. So you have to rotate sites or it can be unsightly.
That was going to be what I was about to ask. What about with progesterone and estrogen if you use it topically? Do you need to rotate there too?
You do.
In those products too?
You do, because if you put it on the same site all the time, any hormone, you'll get what's called a depot effect. And what will happen is the hormone will just stay in the tissue and it won't get dispersed as well throughout the rest of the body.
Does it matter the thinness of the skin, where you put it? In other words, do you need to put it in the crook of an elbow, on a knee, or your neck? And do you ever put it on your face?
Estrogen, E3, the estrogen that most scientists believe decreases breast cancer, is also used on the skin to help with wrinkle depth and pore size. And studies in Vienna were very conclusive on that subject. So we do use E3 on the skin. In conjunction with other things like lipoic acid, vitamin C, et cetera. Otherwise, the other hormones, again, it's a balance issue. Estrogen and progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, if they're on the skin, they can all be mixed in one syringe. But literally, they're made for you. And that is the buzzword, really, in medicine in 2009. It's about individualized and customized care.
And if you put it on your face, will it affect you if you're estrogen dominant?
E3 estrogen is very weak. It's 80 times weaker than estradiol, E2, the one that is the 400 functions in the body. And for most women that are estrogen dominant, it will not affect them.
Okay. And one more question, since you're into hormones. What kind of birth control do you give teenagers?
That is such a hard answer. I don't have an answer to that. And I have five daughters, three of my own and two stepdaughters. In fact, my HRT book, I literally wanted to name Raising Teenage Daughters While Mothers Go Through Menopause. Oh, but I don't have a perfect answer to that. So far, we have some methods. More to come, we hope.
What do your daughters do?
Well, you know, it's difficult. All my daughters now are adults, so it's their individual decision. Mm-hmm. Although I think generally in medicine, we're moving more into estrogen on the skin as a patch or more as an IUD or just an IUD without hormones.
Okay.
I think you'll see medicine moving more in that direction nowadays.
I don't know about the rest of the world, but it scares me. Birth control pills scare me, even though I did it, but then I got uterine cancer when I got older. So.
Well, we do know that, you know, birth control pills contain also progestin, which is a synthetic progesterone, and we do know there is an increased risk with progestin in breast cancer and heart disease. That's been definitely determined.
Oh, one more question, then we'll go. Do you take your hormones every day, or do you give them a break every month or sometime?
Well, if a woman's still cycling, then we cycle her, and it's just the way she always has, 28-day cycles. For women who are postmenopausal initially, while we're trying to balance cortisol and the other hormones, we usually give them to women every day. Now, this is low-dose hormones. If you're talking about high-dose hormones, women have to cycle. But most women do fine maintaining vision, memory, and mobility with low-dose hormones. And with doing the low-dose, after a couple of years, we usually have them not take their hormones on Sunday. So they take them Monday through Saturday, off on Sunday. That gives them a hormonal holiday of 4 to 5 days every month. And that way they don't get symptoms of hot flashes or their memory not being as sharp while they're off hormones for 4 to 5 days in a row.
Okay. Wonderful. I hope you'll come back when your new book gets out so I can pick your brain for another hour. It's such a pleasure having somebody to ask all these questions. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. It would be a pleasure.
And one more time, where can people find you?
They can find us at the Center for Healthy Living, cfhll.com, or 313-884-3288.
Thank you, Dr. Smith. I appreciate your taking the time to come on. And good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health. Integral Health. You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.